Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Rita Roy, CEO at the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming spine conditions through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that, and some of these stories you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal healthcare. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be speaking with Mike Kotz, a tennis pro who started having severe pain down his leg in April. In June, he had a successful surgery to repair a ruptured disc. Within weeks, he was back to work and teaching on the tennis courts. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Mike's story. Seven weeks before Mike had his surgery, he began experiencing severe leg pain.
From day one, the pain in my leg was very intense. I could walk, forget about teaching tennis, because I could barely walk. It was a big struggle, and it was extremely painful.
Every couple of days, the pain in Mike's leg moved to a different spot, and he could feel the nerve running down his leg. So he went to see an orthopedic surgeon.
At first, the orthopedic surgeon and I thought it was a knee problem, but the orthopedist suspected it was a lower back problem because the pain kept moving in my leg. Also, every day, about 20 to 25 times a day, I would get a super sharp, super intense pain in my quad for about 2 seconds. That made me shriek and also freeze in my tracks every time. After 6 weeks, I had an MRI, and in week 8, was in surgery to repair a ruptured disc the size of my pinky finger that was hitting the nerve, which was causing all the pain down my right leg.
Mike underwent a non-invasive microdiscectomy that was extremely successful. Following 6 weeks of recuperation at home, he was back to work and teaching tennis. After 10 weeks, he resumed playing tennis, doubles matches, that is. Mike, your story is important because it shows what success can happen with quick action. You began to experience what sounds like an unbearable amount of pain. Tell us what that was like, and how did you feel that you knew you had a situation that had gotten to the point that you couldn't control it and you needed to see expert help?
So after about 2 days, it started on a night where I came home from the tennis club I work at, Bethesda Country Club. I had pain in my leg. It was bad, but not debilitating yet. The next day when I woke up, I had the day off. It was still there, but it was worse. Starting that night, for several nights, the pain was behind my knee and was so unbearable that it woke me up every night at 2 a.m. for about a week. I wanted to wake my wife up each time and take me to the emergency room. It was that bad, but somehow I didn't and fell back asleep at 5 or 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. Those were terrible days.
Oh my gosh. And Mike, during that time, were you taking any, like Motrin, ibuprofen, Naprosyn, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs? What were you doing to manage that pain?
I was definitely taking, ibuprofen or Aleve. I was definitely taking that more than once a day. Mm-hmm. It wasn't helping though. That was it was not doing anything. So I knew it was something serious.
Yeah. Had you ever, being a tennis pro for many, many years, had you ever had a leg injury or a knee injury that you knew that this was different maybe?
So after the first week, so 2 years ago, I had a torn meniscus and it was bad, but it was not as bad as this. And that was in one location. So we knew it was my knee right off the bat and that got fixed pretty quickly. This was completely different because the pain kept moving. And even before the torn meniscus, was healed. I was still teaching up until the day of the surgery. I taught about one lesson a week with this up until the surgery, and it was excruciating.
Yeah, that's so such a typical story. You know, we talk about in the foundation, there's a difference between what we call axial pain or like body pain, you know, something that's hurting, a torn muscle or a pulled muscle. That pain, while it's very real and it hurts, it's somehow manageable. Nerve pain, completely different situation, right? So nerve pain versus axial pain. There is no way to describe that kind of pain that comes from nerve pain. I mean, it just is unrelenting. And that I have personally experienced that. And when I talk with people who've had that, they sort of corroborate that, that they're just like nothing would touch this thing.
Yeah. What was also interesting was, so for 6 weeks, I didn't know what it was till I had the MRI, and then it still took another week. So for 6 weeks, the orthopedic surgeon suspected it was back pain after 3 weeks, and he called for the MRI. But during one of those weeks, when I didn't know what it was, my wife and I had to go to Colorado, Boulder, Colorado, for a wedding. I had to stand up on the five-hour plane for half the flight. I couldn't sit down. It was excruciating. Of course, had I known that I had a ruptured disc in my back, I wouldn't have gone on the trip, but I didn't know what it was at that point.
Yeah. Well, I guess the unintended consequence of not knowing is he didn't have to miss the wedding.
That's true. That is true. Even though it was painful that whole weekend, it was a fun wedding. So that's correct.
Yeah. But, you know, to your point on those long flights, I mean, we tell people who are not having an acute situation like you were having with that ruptured disc there, we tell people all the time, just for good preventative spine health care, on a long flight, get up once an hour, at least once an hour, take a walk to the bathroom, walk to the back or the front of the plane, and just move a little bit. Don't sit in that one position for more than an hour. It's just not good for your back. Hip flexors get tight. That, you know, goes, you know, all the way up the chain. So, you know, you can even find yourself with really bad neck pain just from, you know, stemming from your, you know, your hips being tight, moves up your back, moves up into the neck, and the whole spine is funky at that point. So good idea, good reminder to when you're traveling, make sure that you get up, move, and do some little stretches if you can.
Yeah, that helped alleviate it a little.
A little. So, a little. Yeah. Did you find that did sitting hurt more than standing?
Yes, absolutely. The sitting position was definitely worse than standing. Walking was really bad, but standing one spot was a little better than sitting. Although one of the lessons that I have to teach, I mentioned this to you when we were talking, Rita, is called live ball. And basically the pro can be in one spot just feeding balls. It's for an hour and a half. I had to do it for an hour and a half again. I didn't know what was going on, and I could barely make it through 5 minutes, but I had to do it for an hour and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
The pain was just, and I was like, why can't I balance? Why am I having, you know, why can't I stand for an hour and a half like I used to? It was incredible, because it was the not knowing part that was also really bad too.
Were you afraid at that point? Were you fearful?
I was pretty, to use the word freaked out. Yes, I was more than freaked out. Mm. I was super scared. Didn't know what was going on, because at that point the MRI hadn't been.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, during some of those, I hadn't had the MRI even. So I didn't know what was going on. It was extremely scary. Yes.
What do you think the fear was? It the fear that you might have some permanent damage, or just fear of the unknown? Like what were the things that went through your mind?
Exactly. It was the fear of the unknown, and it was the fear of why can't I do something that I used to be able to do? Because again, it hadn't been diagnosed. So it's like, why can't I do something that I did 2 months ago for an hour and a half? After 5 minutes, I'm having pain. Yeah. So it was the fear of the unknown, and just will it ever get better? Exactly.
Yeah. That's that thing. It's like, am I going to be able to get back to my life? Right. That's
exactly.
And Mike, your pain, was it mostly just in your leg, or did you have back pain also, or was it really just in the leg?
I had no back pain whatsoever. Wouldn't have suspected it was my back. at all. I've had relatively, up till now, relatively little back pain my whole life. So it was totally in my right leg and never even suspected it was my back until the orthopedist brought it up.
Yeah. Well, so getting back to that journey with the orthopedist. So 3 weeks after seeing him for the first time, you're not improving. You're not getting better. And that's when he decided time to get an MRI. Let's see what's going on in your back. Right.
That's correct. Right. So I went back to him. I explained to him that the pain was moving all over my leg. And in some spots, it wasn't as bad as others. And in some spots, it was just totally killer. It was awful. Mm-hmm. So he said, I don't think it's your knee anymore. I think it's your lower back. Let's call for a MRI. Mm-hmm. So he ordered the MRI, which takes a while. Mm-hmm. Once you call up, it takes about 2 weeks. They're very backed up. So I had that about, it might have been 3 weeks. So it might have been 3 weeks.
That's frustrating. It's frustrating to wait that long when you're in pain.
It was for what the other thing too is, I'm ashamed to admit it, I can't do open MRI. I can't go in the tunnel. So I had to do Washington open MRI, and that added to how long it was. It was 2 weeks after.
Adds to the wait.
Yeah, that added to the wait. So it was 2 weeks after that when he ordered it.
Yeah, but that's a reality of the journey is that, okay, you're a person that can't be in the tube. You need the open MRI. That takes maybe a little bit longer. And now, you know, you had the pain for a while. Then you went to see the orthopedist. 3 weeks go by. Then he orders the MRI. Another 2 weeks go by to find out what's actually going on. I want to ask you about that 3 week interval from the time that you first saw the orthopedist to the time that he ordered the MRI. So in those 3 weeks, did he ask you, were there things that you were trying to do to manage the pain that weren't getting better?
No. So what happened was he was, and rightfully so, because of what had happened 2 years earlier, he and I were pretty sure it was my knee. And he said, why don't you set up an appointment for 3 weeks down the road, just in case. But I think it's wear and tear in your knee. We did an x-ray. There's a little bit of arthritis in there, a little bit of wear and tear. I think it's your knee. So I guess he told me to stay on the ibuprofen, you know, teach, but not go overboard in matches or any other things, and that it would be better. But he said, set up an appointment just in case, which luckily I did, because it didn't get better, because that's not what it was.
It wasn't better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kudos to that orthopedist, because we often educate people that, you know, if you have back pain, give it 2 weeks, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, take some over the counter, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medication, maybe see physical therapy, take it easy, keep moving, but just rest a little bit. Don't go overboard and see how you're feeling in 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And if you're not feeling better, Yeah.
I forgot. He did prescribe a 6-day course of steroids. You jogged my memory. Okay. I just remembered that. So it didn't help.
Yep. And that didn't help. So that those are conservative treatments. Let's use conservative meaning. Let's use medication. Let's see if we can get some inflammation to settle down, and let's see if that pain kind of simmers down. Let's give it two to three weeks. So very, very typical course there. And then, but after 3 weeks, if things aren't getting better, it's time to do something different. So you got the MRI. So when you finally got the MRI, did you go back to the orthopedist for the results of that?
So this is the interesting part of another interesting part of the story. After 3 weeks, I had the MRI and I had the disc. I had the disc of the MRI, and the appointment for the orthopedist was in about 8 days after that MRI, another appointment with him. In the meantime, at the club that I work at, and this was over Memorial Day weekend, I was working and I was sitting in a chair. And a man walked in who I did not know. And he said, can you get me a racket for my 9-year-old? I want to hit with my 9-year-old who was with him. When I stood up out of the chair, I had one of the shooting moments in my quad where I shrieked and froze. This gentleman said to me, "What's going on?" I told him. He said, "I'm a neurosurgeon." At that point, I said to myself, my mom's watching over me. She passed in 2020. So anyways, he said, "Sit back down in the chair." He ran his hand down my leg. He said, "Your quad is unbelievably weak." He said, "I want to tell you some good news in that you don't have much nerve damage, not much at all." But he said, "Your quad is extremely weak. That's why you're getting that pain." Then what he said is, "Did you have an MRI?" So luckily I did a week earlier. And granted, remember, I did not know him before this happened.
That's amazing.
He's a club member, but I didn't know him. It was Memorial Day weekend. He said, "Give me your name, your birth date, where you had that MRI. I'm going to access it this afternoon from my house and call you back."
Wow. Oh,
it's amazing.
Amazing.
Things were starting to fall a little into place after 6 weeks. So 6 hours later, this was 9 a.m. when this happened. In the meantime, he went out to play tennis. I have two friends who are high up at Georgetown Hospital and MedStar. I called them with the name of the doctor, and one of them said, "Oh my God, Mike, you could not be in any better hands with a neurosurgeon."
Oh, that's amazing.
She said, "I work with him every single day of the week, Monday wow. through Friday."
Wow.
So then he called. So now I knew that things were looking
in the right hands. Yeah, in the right hands.
Hey, yeah, things were looking a teeny bit better than the previous 6 weeks. So he called back. He explained to me what was going on. He said, "You have a ruptured disc." And he said, "It's badly ruptured, but it's not the worst." He said, "If it was the worst, you would have been in the hospital weeks ago." Mm. But he said, it's bad. So then he set up an appointment for Tuesday, because Monday, this
was happened. A holiday. Yeah.
It was a holiday.
Yeah.
He said, "Be in my office Monday at 9. And I said, wow. I said, "Well, how is everybody in your office going to know? It's Sunday and tomorrow's the holiday." He said, "They'll be expecting you."
Oh, and man.
Sure enough, I had an appointment at Georgetown Hospital with Dr. Deshmukh Tuesday at 9 a.m. And they were waiting for me and walked me right in. He showed me the MRI. He showed me the rupture. He also explained, as you're familiar with, the non-invasive microdiscectomy that would take place in the surgery. And he said, "Do you want to do it?" And I said, "I want to do it yesterday."
Wow.
So I said, "How soon can I have it?" This was a Tuesday. He said, "I'm getting you in on Monday."
Wow.
And
that is amazing. That's amazing.
That's the story. And I had it. My wife drove me and I had it that Monday.
So microdiscectomy, minimally invasive, you know, not non-invasive, but minimally invasive, right? Is how that procedure goes.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the questions I asked, because I do teach tennis, was I said, "What chance is there of paralysis from this?" Mm. That was one of my major questions. What percentage of chance will I be paralyzed from this surgery? And he said 0% from this surgery. 0%. So, of course, then I wanted to do it. He said, "The other thing I should tell you is when you wake up from the surgery after the anesthesia, all that leg pain will be gone the second you wake up." And sure enough, it was.
That is a miracle. So you woke up and you're like, "Oh my gosh, my leg feels normal."
Exactly. After 6 + 7, 6 weeks, yeah.
Yes.
After 7 weeks, correct. It was completely normal, and it was amazing. Amazing.
That is amazing. I love this story so much. There's so many pearls of wisdom in what you've just shared with me. And I'm just going to kind of summarize some of those things. Number one, a very caring individual who sees you and says, "Wait a second, let me do a quick exam here." So he does a quick neurologic exam and he does a quick assessment and says, "Come see me in my office. Let me take a look at that." That is a gift. So what a wonderful humanitarian your doctor is. You know, the second thing there is you did something that we often advise people to do is when you're choosing a doctor, how do you know that you've got the right doctor, right? You call friends. We all know people who know somebody, either someone who works at a hospital, someone in the family who's a nurse. This is just really good advice that many of the doctors on our medical and scientific board, you know, suggest is, you know, talk to somebody. Don't just look at health grades or something that's on the internet. Although that can be helpful. The reviews can be helpful, but just talk to people and you'll get a sense, especially if in the hospital that they might be working in, you'll get a sense right away if you're in the right hands. And so you quickly did that and you were very, you know, able to easily ascertain, I'm in really good hands. I am in the hands of an expert, well-trained surgeon who's going to fix this for me.
That's exactly what happened. The doctors who referred him, Dr. and Dr. Evans, have referred a couple of doctors to me. Every one has been amazing. And I did ask Dr. Deshmukh before I said, well, how many of these surgeries have you done?
That's amazing.
He's nowhere as near as old as I am. He said thousands upon thousands. And I don't know how long he was there, but he was at the Spine Center of North Carolina before coming up to MedStar Georgetown. He was at the Spine Center in North Carolina for about 18 years.
Wow.
So I felt completely comfortable.
And Mike, how did you know? That's a very important question to ask. How did you know to ask that question? Because you do want to go to a surgeon that does this procedure a lot, because surgeons can do different kinds of procedures, right? Some do, you know, disc replacements all the time. Some do, you know, deformity surgery all the time. Some are doing microdiscs. So how did you know to ask that question?
I just knew that I needed somebody who was an expert at that surgery so I could get back to teaching tennis.
Yeah.
Going out to outings with the family, playing doubles, which I still love, doing a little bit of weightlifting. So I knew I had to ask that question so that it was somebody who had expertise in that surgery. And also, I knew to ask that question because with the torn meniscus, I knew to ask that with the surgeon who repaired my torn meniscus. So, it's a little bit...
Yeah.
Familiar with questions to ask.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm spending time discussing this is that a lot of times patients find themselves, you know, in a neurosurgeon's office or an orthopedic surgeon's office, and it's a very intimidating place to be, right? You're in pain. You're asking somebody to fix you. And now you're going to ask them, is this something you do? Like, how much do you do? You know, a lot of times people feel bad about asking that, or they feel like that's somehow disrespectful to ask that question. And we encourage people not to feel that way, because you do need to make sure, and you need to feel comfortable and confident that you're in the right place. Did you have any of those thoughts as you were going through that?
I never had the feeling that I did not want to ask that question. I wanted to know the answer. And I guess from my experience, again, going back to the torn meniscus, if that surgeon has performed that surgery over and over, they love telling you. They love saying, I've done it thousands of times, and they have no problems telling you. So once he said that, in both cases, I felt really comfortable. And again, like you said, the referral on top of that, from people I know who are doctors, that just made it a no-brainer for me. Let's go ahead. Let's get this let's get this ruptured disc taken care of.
Yeah, that's amazing. Oh, I wanted to ask you about your spine surgeon being a neurosurgeon. You know, in the field of spine specialization, There are two ways that doctors can become a certified spine surgeon, and that is through neurosurgery or through orthopedic surgery. And we take time to explain that to people because I think it's important for people to look at a spine surgeon who has completed fellowship training in spine, whether they're a neurosurgeon or they're an orthopedic surgeon. We say, look to make sure that they have done specialty training, which is, you know, through a fellowship, an accredited fellowship program in spine surgery. Did that come up at all for you as you were talking with with your doctor?
Not exactly. But you did jog my memory in something. On the day that I went down to the office, his office at Georgetown, I also had the orthopedic surgeon appointment for him to look at the MRI that same afternoon. So my wife very smartly said to me, keep that appointment with the orthopedic surgeon to see if he looks at the MRI and gives you the same second opinion.
That's great.
As a neurosurgeon. So I kept, and he's a doctor. He just did wonders on my torn meniscus. I mean,
yeah.
So he's a wizard too. So I kept that appointment and, he said, look, Mike, you could go one of two ways. He goes, I could send you to PT and you could get a, epidural and, you could have, you know, do a leave and ibuprofen. And I immediately said, I'm not looking for something that's going to stay with me the rest of my life. I want to do surgery. And he said, there are no bad choices here. He goes, I think that's going to be an excellent choice for you. And I think you're going to do just fantastic with that surgery. And I don't think that surgery is his specialty. So,
no, right. Yeah. So it sounds like he's more focused on knees, probably knees and hips, and maybe he's not the spine orthopedic specialist in that practice.
So right. He's a knee expert.
Yeah.
He's just
incredible. And again, you go to the right provider for the right problem, right? But how great to use that appointment. That was so brilliant that you did that, to go and hear from another expert who could say, these are the choices, but the choice you're making is an excellent choice and it's the right choice for you and it's definitive treatment.
Yeah, that was totally, my wife's father was a plastic surgeon. So that was just, you know, growing up with a dad who was a doctor. That was her advice and that was tremendous advice.
Yeah. Really great advice.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is such an amazing story because, you know, again, it points to the kinds of outcomes that people can expect to have when it comes to spine treatment. You can get the right treatment for you and get back to your life. Like it's done, it's fixed and you move on. But there's still such fear and confusion. And I think there's a little bit of stigma still out there that, oh, you've got a back problem. It's going to go on and on. You're going to need to have another surgery. It's going to, you know, and you may need to have another surgery just because of the way your anatomy is. But the point is there are great treatments available now, miraculous treatments that get people back to their lives pretty quickly.
Yeah, I will say this. I forgot to mention this. During those 6 weeks, it was pretty rough. I mean, my thoughts were pretty rough. I'm a very happy person. I have a pretty positive outlook on life. During those 6 weeks, no, it went the other way. I want to wait till for Social Security several more years.
Yeah.
And my brain was going in different directions. I was like, well, I won't be able to teach tennis. I'll start Social Security now.
Yeah.
And I own a house also that I rent. I was like, I'll be fine. I can sell the house. And,
oh my gosh.
So my mind was completely going in other directions during that 6 weeks.
It's just that fear, that anxiety, that worry of what's going to happen is actually a very serious sort of side effect of having a spine condition. We talk about the mental health aspects of having to go through a spine condition, and it is very real. And there was a report that came out recently that said mental health conditions are the number one companion disease that happens when you have a diagnosis of a spine condition.
Wow.
That anxiety and depression really play a part in patients' journey as they try to find answers. And that's what we're here to do at the foundation. We're here to support people. We're here to say, you're not alone. There are answers out there. You know, come to the foundation, meet the advocates, listen to the podcast, talk to somebody, get support so that you don't have to feel alone, afraid, isolated, and worried. You can get really good support to get to the answers that you need. So I thank you for sharing your story and being part of the National Spine Health Foundation, giving that hope and giving solutions to other people. It's really just awesome to have you spend your time with us. I know you're busy on the tennis courts. Yay, you're back on the tennis courts all the time. And you've carved out the lunch hour here to be with us. And I'm so, so appreciative of that.
I was more than happy to do it. If this can help one person, if it can help anybody, that's just a great thing. And another thing I'll say is I am back to playing doubles, which I absolutely love. And for the first three matches, did I have a hesitation when I ran for a ball, jumped up for a ball? Hey, it's going to hurt my back. Yeah, I had a thought or two in that in about the first few matches. It doesn't even enter my mind now. I'm doing whatever I want. Mm-hmm. I'm running, going all out in doubles matches. Those thoughts are gone. It's been miraculous. Yeah.
That's awesome. Bravo. Final thoughts as we wrap up our conversation here. You know, a lot of times we say in spine, it's a journey, right? It's not a one and done situation. You had your surgery, you got the herniation fixed, but now you have to really take care of your spine. We all do. Not just that a person who's had a surgery, but all of us. Strengthening our spine, strengthening the core muscles, stretching and staying flexible, working on our balance. Those are all things that we have to do over time. Have there been changes in your life, Mike? Are you doing things differently or better or the same? Or how has that impacted your life now?
Absolutely. That has changed. I do core exercise. I try and do it every day. I probably do it at least 5 days out of the week. So probably 6 days I'm doing core exercises to strengthen my back. And the doctor had told me my hamstring and quads were tight. So I do that too, the hamstring exercises. Mm-hmm. When I do the core exercises, I wake up every morning and do it. My back feels great, my hamstrings. And I do yoga once a week now, and that helps a lot too.
That is awesome. Congratulations. That is awesome. I mean, it is a life-changing event to have a spine condition strike. And so there are good things that come from that, right? The silver lining is learned a lot about how to take care of your spine. This is something that over time, you know, in fact, we just put out some messaging over the weekend, love your spine over time, you know, as we age, whether you're 18, 28, 38, 68, you got to take care of that spine at every age and at every stage. And it just becomes more and more important.
That's great advice. And it's so important. About three people told me before the surgery, hey, you're going to have to start doing core exercises. Maybe five people told me you'll need to start doing core exercises several times a week. I'm doing them. They're easy. They're fun. And it's making a huge difference. I can tell.
I love what you just said. They're easy, right? These are not complicated exercises. You don't have to join a gym. You just learn them, do them, wake up, drop down next to your bed, do those stretches in the morning and move on with your day. And it's just easy stuff to do that have a huge impact to how we move.
Yeah. In my case, I had a physical therapist. His name's Isaac. He was tremendous, tremendous. Mm-hmm. And, I saw him eight. I thought I only wanted to do four sessions. My insurance paid for nine. I did eight sessions with him.
Great.
Learned all these core exercises, about 10 to 12. And I, like I said, I do them religiously and it's making a world of difference.
Yeah, that's awesome. So after your surgery, you had physical therapy for recovery?
After 4 weeks. Yep. For 4 weeks, I couldn't do anything. I could take a walk outside.
Yeah. Just lay low, walk, keep moving, but just lay low, let it heal, right?
Right. And then after 4 weeks, the neurosurgeon said, okay, now is the beginning of your life. I said, what do you mean? He said, you can drive straight up. I had to lean back for 4 weeks.
Oh, gosh.
Even when I ate dinner, I had to lean back. He said, you can drive straight up. You can start your physical therapy. And he said, in 2 weeks, you can begin teaching beginners in tennis.
Amazing.
So it was pretty quick. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, again, Mike, it was just such a delight to meet you and hear your story. Sharing your story with the world, with our community and with the world will no doubt help someone who's listening, and help them understand how to make the best decisions for them and feel supported. So I thank you so very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Roy, for giving me the opportunity to discuss it, and that if it helps anybody, I'm so happy about that. So it was my pleasure to do this. Really, I'm glad I did it. Thank you. So.
Right. Gosh, Mike, that was beautiful. Thank you for saying that. We do feel so passionate about our mission here and, serving as a voice for patients in spinal health care. There really hasn't been a comprehensive effort like what we're doing. And, really means a lot, for folks to give their time and to share their story. So again, I thank you for that. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure. I was more than happy to do it. Thank you.
At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and to access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.